Welcome back to In Depth with Academia. I'm Richard Price, founder and CEO of Academia EDU, and I'm your guide through some of the latest and most challenging ideas in academic research. Today I'm taking a closer look at a paper by Ruku Iansson called Te Pautama Aura Framework, Colonization PTSD, The Poison Ivy Garden. And let me just remind everyone right at the start, my role is to present these ideas neutrally, not to endorse them or claim they're the final word. Academic research is about exploring perspectives, not dealing in absolute truths. Okay, let's get into it. So, what's at the heart of this paper? Ruku Iansson is tackling, honestly, a really thorny issue, how day-to-day language, ordinary sentences people say without thinking, can actually function as a vehicle for ongoing colonial trauma among Maori communities. The core problem the paper addresses is, why do certain casual comments, things you hear at work or at one-hour gatherings, sting or wound so deeply? And really crucially, how can this cycle of harm play out over generations? Now, why does this matter for you, for me, for anyone listening? Because it's about understanding that history isn't just something frozen in the past. It lives on in everyday interactions. Maybe you've said something you thought was harmless encouragement, or maybe you've been on the receiving end of a comment that made you feel off, but you couldn't explain why. This paper offers some language for naming that experience. Let's get into the meat of Ruku's argument. The paper uses something called speech act theory, originally by philosophers Austin and Searle. The idea is that words don't just reflect reality, they actually do things, they perform actions. For example, when someone says, "I do" at a wedding, they're not just describing marriage, they're making it happen by speaking. Whoa, right? So small sentences can be clinical events, not just chit-chat. Now here's where it gets quite intricate. Ruku Iansson focuses on three everyday sentences. You're still moaning about that, and picking up the Rio is easy. Look at the Pepe and Rangatahi. And finally, you should go back to your marae. Ask your kumatua. Each of these maps onto what the paper calls the triple exile, the original colonial displacement, the sense of not belonging fully in either Maori or Pākehā worlds, and the sense of being cut off from roots altogether. So, what's so damaging about these sentences? It's not just what's being said, but what's being activated underneath. The first, "you're still moaning about that," kind of says, hey, just move on. Your feelings don't matter because the trauma is supposedly in the past. But intergenerational trauma, as lots of studies suggest, doesn't dissolve when a law ends, right? It gets passed down, showing up as heightened stress, anxiety, and, well, a nervous system always on alert. That middle one, picking up the REO is easy. Look at the kids. Sounds positive at first, but it erases the reality that language was actively suppressed by colonial policies. Yeah, like whole generations were punished just for speaking Maori at school. So now when someone says, hey, if kids can do it, why can't you? It tends to translate at a deep level into feelings of shame and inadequacy. And the last sentence, go back to your marae, ask your elders. It's so complex. Marae and kamatua are cultural anchors, sure, but urbanization and forced relocations often broke those connections. Sometimes going back isn't possible. The advice ends up highlighting loss, not healing. The paper leans hard into the metaphor of poison ivy. Poison ivy doesn't scream danger. It just settles in quietly, and before you know it, it's everywhere. Hard to see and even harder to pull out once it's got its roots in. Same with these sentences. They feel neutral, maybe even well-meaning, but they keep wounds open, generation after generation. It raises the fascinating point that for many Wanao, the psychological baggage of colonization becomes the very structure you sit on. Luggage as chairs, which is kind of vivid and disturbing. So what does the paper suggest can be done? The proposed clinical response is called dimensional autophagy, not about purging or forgetting the wound, but metabolizing it, turning what's been painful or toxic into something that can nourish growth. Instead of just getting over it, the focus is on naming, unpacking, and transforming inherited pain, making space to plant something new, to, like, build an intentional garden. And as always, a quick digression. Oh man, whenever someone says the word garden, I can't help but remember my own attempts at keeping houseplants alive. Let's just say I have a black thumb. But anyway, back to the research. So, for listeners, why does this all matter? Well, maybe it's a moment to check in with ourselves. Am I really hearing what someone's trying to say? Or am I maybe dismissing something important out of habit? Could I approach conversations about trauma with more curiosity and less just get over it energy? And for those living these realities, maybe there's comfort in having some language to describe those invisible injuries. All right, wrapping up, just a reminder, I'm presenting Ruku Iansson's paper with a neutral lens, not endorsing, not critiquing, just laying out the insights. Papers like this are starting points, not endpoints. They nudge us to look again at what's normal and ask whether ordinary speech is keeping old wounds alive, and if so, what we could do about it together. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Academia. Keep questioning, keep reflecting, and remember, academic research is about sparking dialogue, not closing it down. Until next time.